take it away.
Wasting away, waiting for someone to come notice you. And you deserve it after all you really do. 'Cause the kids from your old school are so cruel to you.
So this song, the you is a little bit more specific?
Well,
general?
So this song started out general. It was just sort of this idea of a person and that, you know, that we've all met, you know, that's maybe a little later in life and they're finding that they've isolated themselves through their own decisions. And, you know, at some point in writing it, I was like, oh shit, is this song about me? Like, am I writing it to myself? And then in the end, I actually think I was writing it to a former bandmate at the time who I saw a lot of myself in, but you know, I also saw like where I could be if I, you know, if I didn't stop fucking up.
A bit of a cautionary know? Tale.
Yeah, to myself, really.
Yeah. Like, watch out.
Yeah, like, man, you don't want to be that, like, no. You know. And so, but I mean, still, the song itself is, you know, and listening to the words, it's pretty vague. You know, it's not being very specific or calling anybody out. It's just kind of, you know, saying that you've been waiting, you know, to get discovered or for,
yeah, that was the, like, right in the first verse when you're talking about like waiting for someone to notice you.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking like, oh God, there's so many contexts in which this could be.
Yeah.
And there's so many meanings that you can place on it. And, you know, like, how many times in my life have I just waited for my life to happen to me,
right,
essentially, rather than creating the life that I live.
Exactly. And you know, there's an easy trap to fall into of feeling as though you know, you deserve something, or you deserve to be noticed, or there's something special. And, you know, it's true, there is something special about everybody, right? But that's just it. If everybody's special, then nobody's
special. Nobody
is
special. You know? I remember having a slight intoxication-induced discovery of, like, just having that. I think I, like, wrote it on a whiteboard and was just like, if everything is meaningful, then nothing is meaningful. But also, everything can be meaningful, and also nothing can be meaningful. And those are actually slightly different states, though they are very related.
Yeah, they're two sides of the same coin, I think. Yeah. You know, it's whether, you know, it's the difference between being, you know, Buddhist or being like a nihilist. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you're both saying that, you know, everything is suffering and nothing matters. But, you know, they're different approaches to the same kind of concept. You know?
Yeah, and I personally, I find there's a lot of liberation in feeling like nothing matters.
Right.
Like, it's fine no matter what I do in life. It doesn't matter, really. In the grand scheme of things, if you get grand enough, it doesn't matter.
Totally.
Yeah, so for me, like, I think a lot of people would find that, like, really, like, sad. But I think for me, it's just like, it doesn't matter how much I screw up.
Yeah.
Like, it does to the people that I screw up with, and, like, who, you know,
right,
there's consequences to my actions, absolutely. But it's not, I'm not going to go down in history as, like no one cares enough.
I mean, that, to me, like, that's a really comforting thing. You
yeah.
know? I mean,
like, if you're always scared of making mistakes, like, that's something that I'm always scared of making any mistake.
Yeah.
And
same.
Like, perfectionism to a fault. So it relieves a lot of anxiety for me to think that it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah. It's definitely a relief. Same. I mean, I find that, yeah, I can be overly hard on myself, but, you know, very accepting of everything else from everybody else, you know?
Yeah. Very, it's funny, like, how that double standard.
Yeah. I totally understand that, you know, people are going to have bad days, or they're going to fuck something up, or they're going to, like, you know, not always be kind. But it's hard for me to accept that from myself, you know? So I don't know. Somehow that's all in this song. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I definitely got that. And do you think that, do you think you've gotten better at that? I find as I get older, my life and the way that I view it, the way that I experience it, the things that I do, how I think about it, all changes a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, do you think that your relationship to that has changed?
I think so. You know, it's getting better. You know, ideally, we should always be getting better, right? I have, in the last several years, really been able to, you know, accept my own flaws and my own mistakes, and, you know, be more forgiving of myself. But, you know, it's like, I was raised in a very conservative Christian upbringing, and so there's always a certain amount of guilt involved. Like, I'm always doing something wrong, so, you know, it's an unintended consequence of that sort of mindset, but it's hard to shake.
I'm always so fascinated by, like, people who grew up religiously, whether they've continued to be religious or not. It's still something that really affects you psychologically for a long time, and it's an experience that I don't really have. Like, I was raised, if anything, anti-religiously. Like, my dad was very anti-religion because he had very bad Catholic experiences, and then my mom was pro-religion, but she kind of, like, held it back a little bit because my dad was so anti-religion.
Right.
So I have a lot of friends and people in my life who were raised very religiously.
Yeah.
Like, I'm dating someone who went to, like, a religious school.
Yeah.
And for me, my high school, so I was from a very small town, 6,000 people, Perth, Ontario.
Yay.
And we had two high schools. There was the Catholic high school and then the public high school. And that was your option.
Right.
You know, there was nothing else. So I went to, like, the public school because I wasn't religious. I went to church, like, two or three times in my life, and they were, like, horribly scarring experiences.
Yeah.
I hated it. So, I, like, for me, But also, to sort of like add to that, I did find that I was a very spiritual person. Mm-hmm. Like from a young age, I definitely believed in sort of the universe and some sort of larger power. I had trouble with religion and like the religious community.
Well, I think that being religious and being spiritual are two very different things.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, people who are very religious are actually not very spiritual. They're more dogmatic.
Or at least not necessarily. Like, it's more common, for sure.
Sure. I don't mean to paint with a broad brush.
But, generalities.
But if I may speak in generalities, you know, in my experience, the type of church that I grew up in was a very judgmental sort of place. Mm-hmm. And they were more interested in, you know, appearances than in any like actual, you know, relationship with God. So it, you know, it's just struck me as being, well, full of shit.
Yeah. But, I remember like in high school, I don't know if this was like a normal high school experience, but this is a high school experience that I had, was that I had within the public school that I went to, the evangelical church started recruiting people from our school. Like they would come and it's super creepy. I was very creeped out by the whole thing.
Yeah.
And anyways, they would come and like, you know, they had like a games club or whatever, like, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. There's nothing weird about that, but they would
but then they do a sneaky on you.
They get real sneaky. And they were recruiting specifically the kids that didn't really have a big friend group or any friend group necessarily.
Right.
And they became each other's friends, which is really great and awesome and cool.
Sure.
And then, but the thing is that it's under the guise of religion.
Yeah.
It's not just friendship.
They're not just being kind because they're kind. You know, they're being kind because they've been commanded. I grew up evangelical as well, so I feel like I can speak about this not with authority, but with just, you know, from experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is motivated by this command to go out and, you know, convert people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because you want them to go to heaven too. You know, so there is some sort of altruistic thing in there, but at the same time, it's more about like racking up points.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. It didn't speak to me. I didn't find it as, you know, because I do enjoy spiritual things. I do enjoy like thinking that the world is bigger than me, you know, thinking that there are things that I can't see. I just don't believe in like a big gray white man, you know, in the sky that's like, you know, commanding all these things. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I am also highly skeptical of like that image of it. And I remember thinking like, so with that group, I actually went to, because I was invited to go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Don't judge. So I was like, I will go to like one of these events and I will see what your youth group is all about. And it was like a movie night and they had just gotten like it was a new church that they were like just building.
Oh yeah.
And so they were like, we've just got new pews and everything, new seating. So please be respectful. And like immediately they're like, they have their feet up on the chairs. I'm like, you guys are awful.
Yeah.
Like if this was the house of God,
it's supposed to be God's house. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like if this was,
yeah,
you are being horrible and you are the people who are saying that you believe in this.
You're terrible house guests.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spend eternity with you, to be honest.
Right? And I was just like, I couldn't stand the lack of integrity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I think that's ultimately what drove me out of it as well. You know, like I did go to Christian school for elementary and into middle school. And for high school, I convinced my parents to send me to a public school because I felt that I wasn't going to be competitive in the job world or like, you know, I just felt like I was getting a, you know, bogus education.
That's,
and I wanted
so
to be able to go to college and do all these things, you know?
Because from my perspective, I always thought that there was like some weird like community of religious people who are helping each other up regardless of whether or not they have
that's true too,
the to expertise extent. And knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, and it's different too, right? I think there's a difference between people who are, you know, very involved in like a Catholic or Episcopalian church or, you know, those sorts of things. Because it's almost like something you do for society at that point, right? And then that gets you into, you know, your Ivy League school or whatever. Mm. And like, it's a little secret society. But the evangelicals are not really...
Yeah, like you do that, you run track, you know, you get into schools. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know, you become a lawyer or I don't know.
Yeah, whatever happens, yeah. I don't know, we're musicians, what do we know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. I was a musician and I didn't want to do any of those things. And, you know, like in evangelicals, you know, sure, I could have gotten a job, but it would have been like... working for, you know, the dude's plumbing business or like carpet cleaning or, you know, I mean, the
like,
ones that
they're
are
legit jobs, but yeah, not something you're excited about.
Not something that I'm really into, you know. I wanted to play music and I wanted to be able to study music and I couldn't do that in my like little rinky dink evangelical, you know, school that was taught out of trailers. So, you know, that's something that I'm incredibly grateful for because that my parents gave me that, they listened to me, you know, they gave me that chance.
Yeah. That's really awesome. That speaks a lot to your parents.
It's true. Yeah.
And your relationship with them.
Yeah. And well, and it changed my life really. I mean, changed the direction of everything, you know, that's where I got exposed to like, you know, like punk music that wasn't Christian punk music, you know,
I know. I always thought that was such a, like, I didn't, when I discovered that Christian punk music existed and was a thing, my mind was blown.
I know. I know. It's so bizarre. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's very weird. But I was already sort of into that stuff. So it was like the gateway, right? You know, it's like a gateway drug. Mm-hmm. And, you
careful,
know, and
folks.
That's it. So I got into, you know, interesting things and I discovered, you know, grunge music and like all these, you know, fun, weird things that were totally different than...
What was the first like band you remember latching on to in the secular world?
That's hard. You know, I don't know who was first. You know, but
one that jumps out.
Yeah, there was this punk band called the Vandals that I really, really got into as like a 14-year-old.
Now I do not know the Vandals. Tell me about them.
I liked them because they were just so. They were kind of crass, you know. They were punk, and they were, you know, Orange County punk, like that sort of SoCal thing that was happening, and. Like their words were really irreverent. The lyrics, you know, were just, they were like smart. They were witty, but they were also just like, you know, talking about diarrhea, you know? So somehow it really,
the 14 year old loved
in me. Yeah, exactly. And it felt really liberating, you know, to not have to like be singing about Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
But I would like listen to them in my room. And then I knew when all the curse words were, so I could like, dip the volume real quick. You know, I remember like my mom coming in and being like, what are they saying? It was one of their songs. I forget which one it was. And I just made something completely up that was not what they were saying at all. And I just lied straight to her face. It was something that I still feel really guilty about, actually.
I bet you do.
You know,
but like, I mean, you're a teenager. Every teenager lies to their parents a little bit. But if you have a good relationship with your parents, you feel bad about it.
And they had been kind enough to let me, you know, explore, right, and get out of that world. And so that's how I paid them back by listening to music with swear words and, you know, sneaking beers and cigarettes. And,
yeah, they probably they probably were like fully aware of all of this. And
yeah,
they were
I'm
sure. Okay,
sure. I'm sure. And they just allowed me to think that I was clever.
Yeah.
You know, but. Yeah. No, I mean...
They didn't want to take that away from me.
Exactly. They saw that it was apparently really special to me, really important. So. But, as I say, I mean, that really just... You know, that's when I was able to start really playing in bands, and it just, again, changed the direction completely. So...
When did you start playing music?
I learned guitar when I was about 12 years old. my dad plays guitar. He plays bluegrass.
Did you learn it from him?
Yeah, on this guitar that I'm playing right now, actually.
Mm.
This is a, it's a Sigma, which is a Korean guitar made by Martin,
mm-hmm.
From the 70s. And it's really good, you know? I mean, it always sounded really good because it's, you know, old. And
it looks well-made.
Yeah, it's well-made. It's very sturdy. And it was a kind of a pain to learn on because, you know, the action was really high. And I've actually had some work done on it to, you know, level it out and stuff. But he plays bluegrass, and I was never really interested in bluegrass. He tried to teach me, and it just wasn't... Because it was what he did, it wasn't what I did.
Yeah, you know? And you were like 14, well, 12.
Yeah.
You needed to establish your own identity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I found that punk music was easy enough to play, right? So as soon as I learned power chords, you know, just, you know.
Power chords? So I struggled when I was learning guitar so hard. And then when I learned that power chords existed.
Yeah.
And especially... when I learned about drop D.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. I was just like, this is how was this secret only now unveiling?
How did I just figure this out? Exactly.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know, maybe like a year after I started playing guitar. Yeah.
It was a couple of years for me. I was playing only like chords and trying to figure out why these chords I was playing, just these open chords, didn't sound like the music I was listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they got like a different kind of guitar or something. I don't know what's going on.
Especially when you look online and you see like you just search for the chords for a song and they'll say like E, A, whatever, but like they might be playing it differently.
You ready?
Yeah.
Hypnotist, your hedonist, your pill. Infiltrate, intoxicate you, if it be your will. You can take me anytime to numb the things you feel. Taste me on your lips like wine, your secrets to reveal. Never coming down. High off a sacred sound. Hold me on your tongue, I'll be the one to set you free. Liberate me, educate you, teach you not to see. Keep me in your wicked mind, naked and profane. Taste me on your lips like wine, your sacramental shame. We're never coming down. High off a sacred sound.
I love that song. It's a great song.
I love singing that song with you.
So. Yeah, it's really fun. And I'm so glad that we met in December of last year. So yep. Just a couple of months before COVID made everything shut down.
Right.
And so we had like one awesome recording weekend in Wakefield. And then like since then we started like working together. We started, you know, practicing a little bit more. And then it was just COVID and nothing happened. It was just in a standstill. So
exactly.
We've known each other for about 6 months or a little bit longer than that now, like 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
And yet.
That's wild.
I know. Isn't that wild? Yeah. I feel like I've known you that long at least.
Yeah. There was something about having that really intense weekend of recording with Dan Beezy and, you know, Will and Fred Pelayan and, you know, that whole crew.
Julian.
Yeah. Julian was there. You know, it was a real bonding experience, I think. And I came out of that feeling like I knew all of you a lot more than I, you know. I mean, I had never met you before, so I knew you a lot more than
going into it. I had met Dan a couple of times.
Yeah.
I had met Julian less, but a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't know anyone. And then, you know, coming out of it, then like, you know, James and his partner and Brian, and it was just like a whole weekend of meeting awesome people and getting to know a bunch of awesome people in a beautiful landscape.
Exactly.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig was awesome. Still my buddy. You know, I want to go record with him too.
And yeah, he does a lot of really like interesting stuff out in Wakefield with like video projects and sound projects. And
yeah, he's a really cool guy.
Yeah, there was something magical about like going and recording in like an old church house by the water in Wakefield, surrounded by rolling hills, and
in the middle of winter too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really was. It was magical. And it was a really fun, you know, intense session, you know. And
you slept in the church the first night, didn't you?
Slept in the church.
What was that like?
It was a little bit weird. You know, the thing is, so Fred and Will and Brian slept upstairs in the church. I started out upstairs, but it was significantly colder upstairs than downstairs because
it was better insulated downstairs, if for no other reason than the fact that it was in the ground.
Yes, exactly. And there was a separate heater, I think, for downstairs. So, I mean, don't tell the church, but I just like turned it up, you know, to like 72.
Nice.
Fahrenheit. It was in Fahrenheit. Uh-huh. And I slept super cozy. It was great.
Nice.
When I went to the basement. But then it was weird to be sleeping in the basement by myself in a church. But, you know, I had enough other substances in my system that I slept pretty soundly.
Yeah, I remember being, like, super insistent on the room that they had, the Airbnb.
Yeah.
That they had already secured. They were already paying for it.
Right.
And I was just like, guys, there's an Airbnb. We could be sleeping in a real bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even know anything about that. It was just like,
I was promised an Airbnb by Dan personally, and I held him to that promise, and he's so good.
Dan
like,
is great.
Like, Dan Beezy is such a sweetheart, and he will absolutely come through on his promises, mm-hmm. because I think he has a lot of guilt if he doesn't. And
yeah.
Which is a good thing, but also kind of unnecessary, but also I really appreciate it.
Yeah, he's just a good dude, man. I think that's, you know, we were talking earlier today, not on the podcast, but about, you know, some experiences that we've had with people here, hanging out, you know, down by the St. Lawrence or whatever. And there's just this really special feeling of community in this city. In particular, to have fallen into this group of really amazing people, you know, and it all just is random, you know, like I met Will and Fred and they met Dan somehow. And then I got to know Dan and then, all of the like St. Henry kids and like,
there's a particular vibe happening in St. Henry right now. And
yeah.
And it's been going on for a few years, and it's been a really great community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like,
Bard Corcel and as well as, and like people down at like Fatale Lofts and stuff.
It's just a really special community, man. I know that people like say stuff like that all the time. Like, this is a really special community, but it really is.
It really is. Like I grew up in that small town where I, like, my family wasn't from that small town. They just wanted to live in the woods close to Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And so we made the mistake of staying in a town where most people had lived there for generations.
Right.
So I didn't feel like I was a part of the community because I wasn't.
Yeah.
Their community existed far longer than my existence in it.
Right.
So I didn't get that sense of community from that place. And then I moved to Guelph, and I had a good sense of community in Guelph once I started really working at it. And I love so many people in Guelph. But then I came here and I felt like I was finding people where I didn't have to try so hard to build that community. Like, it happened much more naturally.
Yeah.
And it was like similar people who were from similar contextual backgrounds as myself, of being in a place where you maybe didn't find community, mm-hmm. and didn't find that connection. And then we all happen to find each other, and we're all like vibing on each other's, you know, energy, and it's all working really well, and it's magic.
Yeah. That's the classic story of like a metropolitan city, right? You know, everybody comes from everywhere and nobody's from there, you know? So it's easy to just, you know, all of the, you know, stragglers can all get together and form their own tribe, you know, but it doesn't always work that way. And I do feel like in this city, it really does work that way. And, you know, people who have been here their whole lives are happy to have you around and join in.
Yeah. You know? They're excited by the fresh blood.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. it really is. There's just such a great sense of, you know, like, artists are allowed to be artists, and that's great. You know, like, that adds something to this city. And so that's important, you know? I don't know. I spent some time living in New York. I lived there for like 5 years or something. And it's impossible to be an artist. It's impossible to be a musician, you know, unless you have a bankroll. You know, it's so expensive, and the community is so elitist that it's like, you know, how are you going to break in? You know, bands move there when they made it. They don't move there to make it.
That's an interesting distinction, because I love New York. I've visited a couple of times. I absolutely love it, but it is very intimidating. And there's some really great scenes there, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. It's New York. It's absolutely awesome.
It's like the city, you know?
Yeah. but yeah, it's a little bit different of a vibe in terms of, like, Montreal, I found, no question, I fit in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No question, I will find community.
Right.
Whereas there's a bit of a question with New York. It's great. I love New York. Does New York love me?
New York did not love me. it was an abusive relationship, and I had to leave.
Well, I'm glad you got out. I'm glad you're safe. You found some happy community.
Yeah. I grew from it. Actually, it was a good experience. It's something that I'm grateful for, and something that I'm glad that I was able to do, but... Mm-hmm.
I love visiting New York. Yeah. I don't know if I would ever live there unless I, like, you know, made it big and had lots of money. And
you know, you could pay for all the niceties. Because if you don't, if you can't, then it's a really tough city to live in, you know. You just have to have a lot of money to have a nice place and to be able to do things, because everything costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know?
Except for pizza.
Yeah,
pizza's cheap. Pizza is very cheap.
Pizza's cheap. That's true. Yeah. Pizza. I basically survived off of like pizza, falafel, and tacos from trucks, like taco trucks. And you know, $3 for like a giant falafel works pretty well.
Not bad.
You know?
Not bad.
When you're making $7.50 an hour at a coffee shop, you know,
yeah,
like that's insane. So I don't know. It was a good experience. I learned a lot. And I wouldn't be where I am now as a person without it. That said, I love being here so much more. So
it fits you better.
It just suits me, and it, you know, it's a, the people are great. Yeah. You know, that's really what does it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
J'adore Montréal.
Oui. C'est ça.
Do you speak much French?
Not like I can. I studied French in elementary school, or not in elementary, in high school and in college. Mm-hmm. So several years. But this was in the States, so it's like European French, continental French.
Yeah, and it's very different from Quebecois. Like that.
Yeah.
I've been trying to, because I was in French immersion until high school. Mm-hmm. So I had half of my day was in French.
Right.
And I did have some Quebec teachers. Mm-hmm. So that was really helpful. But even with that, I think coming from Ontario, learning English, and then moving to Montreal, it's a very different accent.
True.
And it's hard to get used to. So I've been like watching YouTube videos with Quebec. I've done that too.
Yeah.
Folks. And it's just, I love a lot of the personalities that I see.
Me too. Mm-hmm. I feel like the spirit of Quebec is actually very similar to the spirit of people in the South. Right. Mm. So I find like, we're like weird cousins, you know?
Think it's because of jazz music?
I don't know. Maybe.
Because Montreal is very steeped in jazz.
Yeah, it's true. Very steeped in jazz. Yeah. Well, and like the Acadians and the, you know, French, like French Canadians, a lot of them emigrated to Louisiana as well, you know, when it was a French settlement. So
Creole language.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of like stuff being mixed up that, you know, that makes it, you know, makes it fun. You know?
Yeah.
I do have trouble with the accents and with the, like, the particular idioms. Like, there are little sayings that...
I feel like I just want to have, like, evenings of getting to know just the sayings, like, that are specific to, like, Quebec.
Totally.
Because there's so much that I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's so much that I don't get the joke.
Yeah.
You know?
But I want to. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And, you know, I've tried to make... You know, this whole music community that we're a part of is pretty much Anglophone, right?
Yeah.
But I've tried to make friends with as many Francophones as possible. The problem is we end up defaulting to speaking in English with each other. Because their English is much better than my French, right?
Yeah.
And it's
a very polite thing.
Of course.
That the Francophones do for the Anglophones.
It's very kind.
It is very kind, and that in the short term.
Yeah.
But if you are here and really wanting to learn, it makes it harder to learn because you never get the opportunity to practice.
Absolutely.
But that being said, I can absolutely understand why you would get frustrated with an Anglophone trying to speak French.
Yeah, I think that's more of it. I just annoy the daylights out of them.
Yeah, fair. We're bad at it. We need to try harder.
Yeah. Well, it's true. And the problem, the danger is that like, you know, you start defaulting to English all the time, and then it just becomes easier, and it's a slippery slope, and then you find that you're not trying as much anymore. I'll sit with myself in my apartment and just have these, like, fake conversations in my mind in French, you know? Like
God, all the fake conversations you've had in your mind, do you ever think about that sometimes? Like, all the amount of your life that you've lived entirely on your own in your own mind.
Yeah, that's like 95%.
Yeah, it's a very high percent. It's most of your life.
It's all in my brain somewhere. Not being communicated via words or songs or, you know, anything. It's just, you know.
And that's what makes like everyone kind of a bit of a mystery to everyone else, because we live so much of our lives in our own minds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting concept. I hadn't really thought about it. But it's true. I don't know if it's normal to do it as much as I do.
No, I think it's absolutely very normal, because when you're fabricating, you know, these fantasy conversations in your head, you're preparing yourself for possible situations.
Right.
You're practicing various skills. So it's very useful. It's very like it makes a lot of sense that we do that, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. In terms of French, it has definitely helped me. You know, I'm a bit of an introvert anyways, so it's easier to practice with myself. But I do need to spend more time with my Francophone friends and to actually force them to speak French with me.
Yeah, I feel like I just need to have a group of Francophones who are willing to let me just sit and not talk and just listen to them.
I did that a lot when I first came here. I was dating a Francophone girl for a while, and it was really great, actually. I would hang out with that crew of people, and they would just be having their conversation, and I would be so lost. But it was really like, okay, it helped me get back into the groove of things. And I started taking some classes here, too, through the Quebec government, actually, which was great. Mm-hmm. They lost funding, so the classes went away. But it was really helpful just to get, you know, that knowledge that I do have in there, like to get it dusted off and get the sand out of the gears a little bit.
Remind yourself a little bit before it matters.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, just practice. That's what I need to be doing.
The only Francophone that I dated once I moved to Montreal didn't introduce me to anyone. Like, he would always come and visit me with my Anglophone friends,
right?
And would never introduce me to like any of his friends. So that was kind of a weird thing. It didn't last long. Maybe, I don't know.
I'm only teasing.
I have no idea what the real story is. I didn't know him anywhere near long enough to really know. Hmm. But
should I play another song?
I think so.
I think it's time.
Yeah,
talked about
it's
French
time.
For a while. All right, so I'm gonna play a song. Speaking of isolation, one that I wrote last year in a chalet. I like rented a cabin in the middle of nowhere here in Quebec, and I took my two dogs for a week. And it was this old, like, frontier cabin that had been, you know, a family had lived there in this one room, basically, in the 1800s. And it was really inspiring. And I wrote songs. I only came out with, like, three songs, actually. But this is one of them. And I like it. So here we go.
By the sunshine or the rain, the darkness or the pain, no, I won't be dismayed. I feel the coming of a change, but I'm sleeping alone again tonight, and I don't know why. This lonesome heart of mine, but I don't wanna call you up just to say goodbye. It's just a But I don't want to call you up just to say goodbye. No, I don't want to call you up just to say goodbye. Oh, I don't want to call you up just to say goodbye.
What? That needs to be in a movie. It's so cinematic. Like the turning, the down point just before the, you know, turning around in the story arc, whatever yeah. that ends up being. Man, that especially those last lines. Man, I don't want to call you up just to say goodbye. I feel like I can relate to that, like yeah. so hard. Because I don't know what your relationship is to mental health, but I personally have had a lot of struggles with depression.
Yeah.
And so I have been in places where I wanted to reach out to people.
Sure.
But literally the only thing I would have said would be like, goodbye, because I was very suicidal for a long yeah. time. So that's what comes up for me yeah. When I hear that.
Definitely.
I'm curious what comes up for you.
I mean, there's definitely some, you know, some conjuring of, you know, of suicidal thoughts or tendencies. I've never been like diagnosed with depression, right?
Oh yeah, me neither. I mean, I have a psych degree and I've self-diagnosed.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's it. But I definitely have depressive tendencies, you know, and I tend to gravitate toward, you know, like the songs that make me feel sad, not the songs that make me feel happy, you know? That song was, I mean, it's mostly about a breakup, but it's sort of this, you know, it was a running theme of my life at the time, and just, you know, being isolated, you know, like I had literally rented this cabin and, you know, brought a couple cases of wine with me, you know, and mm-hmm. was just, you know, drinking wine and smoking weed and writing songs. And,
I know exactly that vibe.
You know? Yeah.
And I feel like I've been there so many times, like, of just, yeah, like when you go to a cabin, you have your time off.
Yeah.
You have your intoxicants.
Right.
And you get that sad moment.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, I'm in this cabin alone, I'm sleeping alone, you know, I'm drinking alone. You know, that's a really lonely way to die, and that's not something that I want to do, you know. So, yeah, that's one of my more, it can be difficult to sing sometimes too, because it brings up all that stuff. But, I don't know, it helps me sing it better, I guess, you know.
Emotion. I mean, yeah. Everyone feels it, you know?
When
everyone
you feel it, yeah.
Connects to it.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to feel feelings that are yeah. strong with someone else and feel like you're not the only one feeling those things.
Yeah, exactly. So that line that I don't want to call you up just to say goodbye, it was actually, it was about, I said this earlier, but it was about the end of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I literally didn't want to call that person, because I knew that it would be like goodbye, you know what I mean? We were already done, but I just didn't want to have that like formal conversation,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was the one person that I wanted to call was this person, but I knew the way, I knew how that conversation would go.
Yeah, the conversation you wanted to have wasn't the conversation you would have.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So it would literally just be a goodbye, which I'm not really very good at in general. So
I don't think many people are.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's hard to say goodbye.
Yeah, I usually avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, goodbyes in general, it's hard to say goodbye. It's hard when you don't get to say goodbye.
Yeah.
It's hard to know how to say goodbye.
Right.
Like, it's just, goodbyes are hard. And so, yeah, personally, I often avoid them, and I'll just disappear, and with the yeah. hope that maybe I'll see you again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oftentimes that's my way of dealing with stuff, I suppose, is to not deal with it.
I think that's a lot of people. We don't like to deal with stuff. It's hard. It takes a lot of effort. And there's so many ways in which you cannot.
Yeah, it's really easy to escape.
Yeah.
But I am trying to be, you know, better at just being present and proactive and being able to process things and do things in real time. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm for myself, I'm migrating away from just up and leaving.
Right.
And disappearing, and I'm getting to be a little bit more intentionally if I realize that it's a goodbye.
Yeah.
Which that's a big if. Because a lot of the time I'm like, I'll see you again. That's fine.
Right.
So I don't often recognize goodbyes when I see them. But I think I'm getting better at when I do know that there's a goodbye coming to be a bit more deliberate with it.
Yeah.
I hope.
That's a nice way to be. That's the way, you know, I hope to be. I think in relationships, which is, of course, if we're talking about music, we're talking about songwriting, it's like 90% of it is about relationships, right? My natural state of being in a relationship is to want to be out of it, you know?
Whoa. I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe it that way, but even though it's taking me a minute to wrap my brain around it, I think I really relate to it.
Yeah.
Because, I find when I'm not in a relationship, I'm trying to get into a relationship.
Yeah.
Or I'm just really chill with, like, not being in one.
Right.
And then when I'm in one, I'm looking for the problems.
Right.
Because I've had enough problematic relationships that I'm extra careful.
Yeah.
For like ways in which it could be problematic.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I've had enough of a hard time with them that I have like a really big wall that I built that is difficult to get in. In this relationship that this song was about, I had been really careless with my wall and it wasn't there, you know? So I found it a lot more difficult. But that's something that I'm trying to, you know, to deal with, right? We're all trying to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Because, ideally I would like to have love and to, like, be present in it. You know, not be looking for the exit. All right, so I'm going to play one more song. And it's kind of along those lines of wanting a life in a future with somebody. But, well, you'll just see. You'll see how it all goes. It's still it's still me singing this fucking song.
Thank you. that child and well, 'cause there was nothing left. So why am I in this place? Tears running down my face. I woke up, it seems, and it was all a dream. I don't know what it means. It just keeps happening. Oh, every time I sleep.